This is the Northwoods American Indian Experience, exploring the evolving experience of the Chippewa people in Minnesota. The series is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Humanities Commission. Tribal government and public policy are two aspects of contemporary Indian experience least understood by non-Indians. This program continues with a panel of Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, Legal Counsel Jerry Seck, President Art Gabo, Executive Director Fred McDougall, and moderator Bruce Baird of Public Television in South Dakota. The Minnesota Chippewa Tribe is a confederation of six bands of Indians within the state, with representatives at Mille Lacs, Fond du Lac, Net Lake, Grand Portage, White Earth, and Leech Lake. The activities of these individual and collective Chippewa people, with reference to tribal government and public policy, is remarkably similar to those of any unit of government. Previous programs in the series have stressed this important fact, that tribes are political groups with elected leaders. It necessarily follows that tribal governments need be concerned with the exact same things as governing units at the county, township, or city level. In the very first program, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe's chief legal counsel, Kent Tupper, emphasized the unique trust relationship growing out of the treaties and agreements between Indians and the federal government. University of Minnesota historian and chairman of American Indian Studies, Dr. David Bolio, talked about the right of Indians to govern themselves, to make decisions about education and natural resource utilization in particular. And the first of these two programs, with Minnesota Chippewa Tribe spokesman, provided a chronological overview of federal legislation under which Indians operate today. Among the major laws reviewed were the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, Public Law 280, and the Indian Self-Determination Act passed in 1975. The result is a structured, committed tribal government in Minnesota. In fact, Minnesota Chippewas comprise one of the largest and best organized groups of Indians in America. The executive director of the tribe, Fred McDougall, explains the composition of the tribal executive committee, which is elected by the six confederated Chippewa bands.
The legislative branch are the 12 elected officers off the six reservations. That makes the tribal executive committee. There are four officers within that structure. The president, the vice president, the secretary, and the treasurer. Now, the administration then is purely administration. And the way it's worked in the tribe is that there's a philosophy or general application of rule is that you cannot referee a game and play it at the same time. So the tribal executive committee sets policy. The administration carries it out. The reservation business committee under 638 recently have started to develop their own programs under almost the same structure. So they have developed large administrations in the reservation areas. As I see, the tribe legislative body promulgates rules and delivery of service. The administrative branch carries them out and delivers that program to the reservation, and the reservation is entirely in control of administering it on the local level.
In other words, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe is an umbrella for the rest of the state organizations, but the state reservation organization government administrations are autonomous within themselves.
Yes, sir, they are.
And the tribal organization is an umbrella.
Yes, sir.
With representatives from each one of the organizations.
And the individual reservations are like the states. That's
similar.
Most people understand that analogy.
Okay. Yeah. Then the state of Minnesota, should they deal with the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, or should they deal with individual reservations?
Well, I think I would say they deal with both, depending on what you're going to be doing. Like, for instance, if you have a big program that has to be taken by the tribe. The tribe should administer those out into the local reservations. Then you have your individual reservations who want to do some individual types of things on their own. Let them do their own thing.
Generally speaking, it has to do with the magnitude of the project that the local reservation business committee wants to do. If it's a situation where they can deal with a local unit of government or something like that on a one-to-one basis, that's generally easy. For example, if it's a the one that comes to mind most readily is the state housing and finance appropriation that we just got out of the legislature this year. That was of such a magnitude that the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe and its administrative staff and legal counsel were the ones who pushed that bill through the legislature. The only thing that we said was that any distribution of that money would be the prerogative of the tribe, so we broke it out on per capita, it goes to the reservations, and that's where it's spent. There is a situation in the state of Minnesota that that really hamstrings us in a lot of ways. The six reservations of the tribe go from far in the west to White Earth all the way up to the tip in the east of the state, which is Grand Portage, and then centrally located is Mille Lacs. Now the state, under the Regional Development Commission idea, which is a state planning agency, has broken out the whole state of Minnesota in different planning regions. I believe there are 11 of them. Now, where we get tied up in delivery of services from the state through a regional planning commission is maybe three reservations will be in one regional planning commission, and three reservations will be in another regional planning commission, or even we've had the situation where regional planning commissions will cut right through the middle of a reservation by virtue of a county. And for the tribe to go in and say that we're going to extract money for this social service throughout the state, that becomes very difficult because you have to deal with a regional planning commission on some federal formula monies. So three reservations in one regional planning district will have to get together and go to one regional planning commission and push their project, and they might have to go to even one and a half. And we've looked at that, trying to look at it in a positive way, but the regional planning commission idea is being torn apart by people who don't like it in different county units, and we're suffering as a result of that. So it's kind of being caught between a rock and a hard place. But that's the only situation where I can think of three reservations getting together to deal almost autonomously, and in some cases dealing with county units go individually. But nevertheless, they always seem to want the endorsement of the tribe because of the the tribe's either political power or that's a hell of a long, drawn out answer. We can talk about regionalism until the cows come home because it happens nationally. I mean, we're chopped up that way nationally as tribes. If you take, for example, the Mississippi Green, Minnesota Clean issue about the effluent into the Chippewa flowage, we're trying to say that everybody who is a recipient of that water in any way, shape, or form, from Lake Bemidji through the Chippewa flowage and points beyond, or, Leech Lake Reservation, is we're trying to help people out environmentally. So what we're trying to do, at least, is kill them with kindness, that we do care. So we suffered a couple hundred years of non-Indian oppression or throwing you out of your store. You can't, up to 1953, you can't drink in this bar or exercise any privileges. That's their problem. At least our administration, when they deal with non-Indians, deal in a sense of a one-to-one equality basis. And if you can't accept that, that's your problem. That's the only answer we have administratively. I know Art has to deal in his area with Cass County and those people who have a distorted interpretation of what tribal government is. It's primarily telling them that we're not much different than you are. And if you think it's bad to be in the internal boundaries of a reservation, be subjected to tribal governmental law, that's just your way of saying, I wonder how the hell the Indians felt outside of the reservation. So it's almost a self-admittance that they did practice. They wouldn't even be aware of being treated bad by tribal governments in the internal boundaries of the reservation had they not been aware of treating Indians bad outside. Every reservation area that I am aware of, all six of those in the state of Minnesota, Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, that is, most Indians I know walk through department stores and contribute to the economy. They eat in restaurants, if the non-Indians let them. You know, they generally associate as people. And I mean, if that can't be readily recognized by, you know, by non-Indians as not being, a, you know, people of a violent character, then again, that's their problem. You know, embarking on a large educational effort that's been done in education, at least, where you're going to hit a target area of kids who aren't really, you know, when you talk about the molding kids. And that's the efforts of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe and all tribal governments, is to say that, you know, Indians aren't really what you were talking about before, the bad guys in history books. So, hell, the old biggest, let them die.
You should understand that what you're talking about is lack of communication, and it isn't a unique problem between Indians and non-Indians. It happens between husbands and wives, parents and children. There's the Hatfields and McCoys, where things kind of break down. This country doesn't have diplomatic relations with every country in the world. But I think that I know that Art and Fred have been on radio programs and TV programs. There's a newspaper interview trying to really kind of get the word out and to tell what tribal government is all about, what it's doing, and also to show the good faith when there is an issue that, when they have things in common with other non-Indians. I guess the Mississippi River and the Bemidji sewage thing is a good example. And say, look, we're gonna get in there and fight and alongside of you. And I think it's battles like that that are helping to kind of bring together the communities and get the old hard feelings set aside. Plus, you're also seeing, geez, just in the last 5 or 6 years, in terms of number of jobs, economic development, and so forth, where you see Indians that have decent jobs, they're driving new cars, or, you know, the economics that Fred is talking about, they're buying insurance policies and so forth. And I think that people look around and see that, you know, that isn't the Indians aren't just driving the old 53 Chevs that are burning oil and they're, you know, they're unemployed and whatever. I mean, now there's opportunity. I mean, that, you know, that's kind of what the old stereotype, the Indian was, you know, got, you know, that's what it was all about. Now you're seeing that there really isn't much difference. In fact, I think some people, the sophisticated business people, are understanding that tribal governments are big business, Indians are good clients, and not only that, but having an Indian reservation is like having a military base, and no one in this country wants to get rid of a military base. And if you understood what the tribe does in terms of its programs, Head Start, job programs, you'll see that if the tribe went away, unemployment would go up, you know, business in terms of jobs would go down. I think that message is slowly being felt.
I think, to put it in the simplest terms, I don't think Indian people really care whether they're accepted in a community, only that they're respected in a community. They have a right to the lifestyles they have, the governmental systems they have, and function for their individual selves and for themselves as a whole, as a group. And they don't really care if they're accepted, you know, handshaking, come into the home, have the cup of coffee, step, only respect the right that they have a right to live the way they want to.
So you're always saying, say for example, the Leech Lake fishing hunting fishing agreement with the state, we're expected to behave outside of the reservation, and that's only an effort to say that non-Indians and Indians alike behave inside the reservation. And that money is a contributing factor to enforcement on the reservation, regulated by not Indians, but by a government called the tribes. There's just one comment I want to make that I think has been neglected. And, you know, in most cases, a lot of us, you know, have a tendency to come down hard on local units of government simply because they are, I guess you might say, enforcing regulations or promulgated rules set by the state.
And they're close.
Right. And it's just like a clerk in Macy's or JCPenney's. You don't like the policy of the store, you don't tell the clerk. You know, because that person's not going to be able to do a hell of a lot about it. But I think the state, now, as I indicated earlier, and I think Art can attest to this, or anybody else that's been in, you know, any way involved in Indian country, have traveled a lot in other states in the country. As bad as we sometimes think we have it in the state of Minnesota, and as many times as our legal defense or whatever have taken to task the state of Minnesota, even if we had to do that to establish, you know, what we are, I think we're fortunate here in the state of Minnesota, because I have seen things existing in the state of Minnesota that are completely unheard of in other states. The mutual cooperation that exists between the tribes and the state now is reflected by the Indian Affairs Intertribal Board, you know, the old Indian Affairs Commission, where most commissions, there are 34 of them nationally. The governor makes the appointments to the people who resolve Indian problems. In this state, you become a member of the Indian Affairs Intertribal Board by virtue of your election status on the reservations. If you're a chairman, you're automatically placed on that board. That particular unit of state government called Indian Affairs Intertribal does have regulatory power in a broad sense over every state agency that has an obligation to the general citizen, including the Indian. The legislature, and you know, I'm not going to give this lend this credence to any particular political party, has extracted large amount of, you know, large amounts of money. It's one of the very few states in the country that has a state Indian education section and has a state scholarship program since the early 30s. And we can go on and on in terms of probably one of the very first states, even though other states in the country don't want to, would not like to do it, that has entered into sorts of joint powers agreements with tribes. So is that we don't sound too critical of, you know, of the state of Minnesota. For those who really think we have it bad here, should take, you know, should be afforded the opportunity one way or another to travel to other states and see just how backward some of these things are in other states. So I have to at least. From the point of view of legislative due process, which it took us a lot to get into the political system to have some impact on it, we've managed to you know, to extract our resources from the state, which are ours, and of course it was all generated through tribal government. And I don't want anybody saying that the Minnesota Chippewa tribe cannot or will not or does not give a damn about the general citizen in the state. More often than not, that's what we do.
Let me just tell, if we've got a little extra, we've got some time.
Go ahead.
Two short stories, one involving Art and one involving Chip Wadena, who was vice president of the tribe and chairman of the White Earth Reservation, which really kind of point up, one, sometimes a misunderstanding about Indians and reservations and tribal government, and two, the sophistication that the tribe now has in the operating managing programs. 4 years ago, the Minnesota legislature appropriated $5 million for Indian housing. And that was really a landmark. No other state has spent a penny on Indian housing that I'm aware of, coming out of strictly state appropriated funds with no federal match or whatever. And the tribe had a share of that, Red Lake had a share of the Sioux communities. But it didn't take long to have the tribe use up its $3 million of that funding. So the tribe then went back to the legislature this past session and lobbied to try to get some more money. They had opened up the applications, and it was a low interest, 3.5% loan operation, and were just deluged with people who needed housing and couldn't afford that 9 or 9.5% of the bank. So in the course of lobbying, I can remember one session being down in front of a House committee, and Chip and I were down, and I can't remember who else is with, and we got through presenting the bill, and we had photographs of, you know, the housing that the reservations were seeking to get rid of, and photographs of the houses that the tribe had put up, or helped put up with this first batch of money. So that went well, and most legislators didn't ask many questions. And the chairman was the author of the bill, and he was pushing it, ramming it through, and we thought we were in pretty good shape. But following the hearing, I won't mention his name, but he's a Southern conservative legislator, said, "Say, come here. And Chip kind of went, us? And said, "Yes, come here." And so we walked over there, and the room was kind of, you know, people were leaving, and he said, I really got some questions that I didn't really want to bring up here, and you understand. Chip kind of looked at me, and I looked at him, and I didn't know what was coming. He said, I see your photographs of this terrible housing, and it's just, you know, no one should live like that. And It's just terrible, and I agree with that. And I see your photographs of the good houses that you put up, and he said, you know, it just makes my heart feel good. And he said, really, you know, that's really, I'm proud of that. He said, but what I can't understand is how Indians pay for these houses. And Chip kind of looked at me, and you know, like, who's going to field that question? And I just sort of nudged him, and he said, oh, well, he said, you know, he said, that's a good question, Representative, but, you know, but we've got this finance committee that everybody that makes an application, they have to fill out all the information as to, you know, how much money they're making, whatever, and then we screen it, and we only give it to people who we are convinced can pay for it. And this legislator looked over and said, well, I still don't know how Indians can pay for it. He said, now, he looked at Chip and said, now, aren't the buffalo pretty much gone? And I, you know, Chip kind of looked at me and looked at him like, you know, he thought that was a joke, but the guy was dead serious. And Chip said, well, you don't want to dump all over this guy. He said, well, yeah, they pretty much are all gone, but we started moving into some other things. He said, oh, well, that's good. He said, will you send me a list of some of the things that, you know, ways that your people make money? And I mean, that sounds funny to people in this room, but on the other hand, when you, and the tribe kind of plays in that a little bit. I mean, I think that, to be honest. But some people think that there's a barbed wire fence around the reservations and don't really think that people live in wigwams or teepees. And they don't understand the kind of sophistication that the tribe has. When we were in front of the Senate Housing and Energy Committee this past session dealing with that bill, one of the things there's a Senator Harmon Ogdahl, who's a senator from the Twin Cities, and he runs a bank. And one of the things that he asked was, what's the default rate on the 100 plus or 129, whatever mortgages the tribe made the first go around? And the response was zero. Well, how many people are paying late? Well, we've got a couple people that are late. Everybody else is on time. And then he, you know, just stated from the committee, he said, you know, they do a better job of running that than the banks do of running, you know, our money. And later on during the session, Art and I and a number of other people are sitting in Bill Kelly's office. Bill Kelly is the chairman of the tax committee in the House. And he was asking about, you know, how the tribe had run its program. And Art was telling him, you know, this is how we're running it, and here's how we're the loan committee, and here's the default stuff. And got through, and Bill looked at Art and said, you know, he said, you do a better job running your programs than the state runs its programs, and how would you like to run all the state's programs? And Art said, you know, you're the first legislator I really liked. But I think that's true. I think a lot of people really aren't sure how the tribe is going to operate with a huge sum of money. And if you're in close to it, you just see how impressive it is and how dedicated people are and how they really can get the job done. And I guess that fits in with the sovereignty part, because the tribe has been saying, look, we're a unit of government, and we have elected officials, and we've got staff and whatever, and we can run our own affairs. Just give us a chance. And they're proving it. The legislature saw how the performance of the first $5 million, and after, even though it was conceded at the beginning of the session that there would be no money appropriated, the legislature appropriated $4 million, so it was impressive. Yes.
Participants in the final program in the series have been Art Gabo, President of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, and Tribal Executive Director Fred McDougall with Legal Counsel Jerry Seck. Moderator for the panels has been Bruce Baird of South Dakota Public Television Station KUSD, Vermilion, South Dakota. Music for the series was recorded during Indian Week Powwow by KBSB radio personnel in Bemidji. Featured is the George White drum from the traditional Red Lake Reservation community of Panema. Northwoods American Indian Experience has been funded by a Minnesota Humanities Commission grant to the Council of Indian Students, Indian Studies Program, Bemidji State University, Bemidji, Minnesota, and produced by the Equivalence Fund, Incorporated. This is Frank on Yellow.